Welcome to the Local Spotlight Show here at WJBM Studios in Jerseyville, Illinois, the voice of the Tri-Counties. I'm Chris Lorton. I'm your host today. And back for a second episode, I have with me little Craig Robine. Welcome, Craig.
Good to be back.
And everybody knows I'm joking when I say little. 3,
we'll call it 310.
310.
Three, yeah. Too many.
Craig, last episode, we talked about growing up in Calhoun, playing high school football, being part of a couple state championships, getting recruited by University of Indiana. And what I'll say right here is, if you're listening to this episode and you missed the last episode, at the end of the week, we always put on all of our episodes on our webpage on Listen on Demand. And you can go to all these episodes. I've done maybe 250 interviews thus far. So you can go and look them up and share them with your friends. Now, Craig, we left off at you going to University of Indiana, being recruited by the University of Indiana. Big school, Big Ten. Coming from Calhoun, coming from a 1A school, what kind of eye-opener was that?
Well, it was tremendous. And, even before getting there, the recruiting process was completely foreign to me and my family. I remember Bill Mallory showing up.
Hey, I want to make one thing.
Yeah.
One point clear. Your mom and dad, okay, they lived in a small house in the neighborhood, raised how many kids?
Five kids in a two-bedroom house.
Two-bedroom house.
Right.
I mean, your dad was a hard worker.
Certainly.
Your mom was a hard worker. I mean, blue collar to the max.
Right.
In a small town.
And I'm proud to say that I believe my oldest brother got an associate's degree from Lewis and Clark, and the other four of us all have four-year college degrees, and I have a master's in business. And, you know, everyone came from that environment. And, you know, they invested in us, even though there wasn't a lot of money. They were definitely invested in us spiritually and gave us the tools, right? You know,
yeah. And your dad, he work for?
He was a mechanic every weekend, but he drove a pub truck for Dixon Distributing,
the
Anheuser-Busch distributorship in Alton. I don't know what they're called now, but it's not Dixon. But,
right.
Yeah, it was. Anheuser-Busch was a big part of the family growing up, I would just say. It was everywhere. But yeah, you know, so we were green as gourds, as they say. And I remember, first of all, Colorado State called to offer me my first football scholarship. And my mom, I heard her, we only had one phone in the house, and it was in the back wall. And I heard her say, "That's too far." And she hung up on them. And I said, "Mom, who was that?" She's like, "That was Colorado State. They called and said they went to offer you a scholarship." And I was like, "Mom, that's the first scholarship offer that I've had. And I don't have," she goes, "that's too far, you know."
She wouldn't let you go.
No, well, I don't, you know, and then, you know, Bill Mallory came one day and I remember they had a VHS tape to show us what the campus looked like. He's the head coach at Indiana University. He shows up in a suit and tie, an overcoat. And
comes to your house?
He comes to our house and he walks in and you know our house.
Yeah.
There's no foyer. There's no coat rack.
No.
My mom grabs his coat and just kind of throws it on the floor next to the couch. And he says he has a tape to show us campus and we don't have a VCR player. And it was all kind of, as a teenager, you kind of feel, you know, I wasn't embarrassed, but it started to dawn on me, you know, maybe how isolated growing up there had been. But, you know, the whole process, I remember getting a letter from Michigan, a big handwritten letter saying, "Hey, Craig, area alumni say that you're good enough to play at Michigan. Come to our camp and show us." And there was no chance of me going to a camp in Michigan. Like, it was just not, I just felt like that they would just offer you, you know, I didn't know. So long story short is Indiana was the choice that I made because their head coach was invested in me. He recruited me personally. And he said all these nice things about me, right? And which leads me into showing up at Indiana, right?
Hey, I got a question.
Yeah.
How about U of I? That's in your back door.
Right.
What happened to them?
That's a great question. So by the time I got to that camp that I had mentioned last week.
Yeah, because you went to the U of I camp.
And Lou Tepper was the head coach there at that time. And they had already had their two offensive lineman scholarships committed to a gentleman out of Hazelwood Central and another one out of Oswego. Both large programs, right? You know, nobody comes from 1A schools. It's rare. And I think about this a lot, and it's unfair in a way. I don't know that just from a number standpoint, you would think, well, bigger schools have more kids. They're going to have more Division I players. The other thing is, even if you're a great player at a 1A program, you're not going to get the kind of credibility that someone that plays at Edwardsville does, just because they don't think that you play the level of competition.
Yeah.
And I was really fortunate, and I tell these guys all the time that I play with in high school, you know, I love them so much, because I don't think if I had not been there right after two state championships where the program was getting a lot of credibility, and then being able to be the person that said, hey, through all this tradition and after these two state championships, look at this product that we have, you know. And I don't think if it wasn't for the success that the program and my former teammates had, that I wouldn't have likely had that opportunity. They kind of created that platform. So I'm very grateful for that.
So now you're looking at U of I.
Right.
And you get recruited.
Right.
And you sign on the dotted line. What was your first days like?
Right. So technically, if you're an Indiana person, so the U of I is the University of Illinois.
Okay.
Indiana's IU, right? IU. Okay. Indiana
Sorry,
University.
Man.
But no, let's not stand on nuance. But anyway, reality hit you in the face right away. So the first day you show up there, it was you had like 2 days only of freshman practice. So that means short lines, a lot of repetition, and you really find out right away where you stack up. And we had the run test first thing. So when I was recruited, I was 225 pounds. And over that summer, I probably didn't do everything I needed to do. And I show up at about 265 pounds, fat and out of shape. I fail the run test. They hand me the offensive lineman playbook, which is demoralizing.
Hey man, I can't believe you showed up not in shape.
Yeah, isn't that incredible?
What were you doing all summer?
What people tend to do in the summer in Calhoun County in the 90s. I don't know. I don't want to say that. There wasn't a program for this.
You know what? Once you graduated, okay, maybe from experience, you don't have that constant mentoring and coaching. You didn't have somebody, you know, mentoring you.
No.
You know, saying, okay, this is what you got to do. You know, you didn't have it.
Right.
And a lot of people don't have it in small schools.
Right. Right.
But
so,
go ahead.
Yeah. So you show up and you're excited to be a defensive end. You know, there's some glory in that position. You could get a sack. You can make a tackle for a loss. You might get your name in the paper. And as soon as they handed me the offensive line playbook, I was immediately demoralized because I'm like, there's no glory in this, right? Uh-huh. This is just grueling work. So immediately I was my dauber was down. And that was before we even put the pads on. So that afternoon we put the pads on, and I'll never forget this. Very first drill. We line up, and it's a tackle tight end lined up against a defensive end and a linebacker. And the tight end blocks down, and the tackle pulls around, and the linebacker fills. And it's just like a simple swap block. And the linebacker was a kid from Detroit, and he looked like a Division I player from Detroit. He cheated the drill. Before I even got my head turned around to pull up and block him, he ear-holed me, laid me out. And the coach who had came to my house, the head coach who had treated me so well, looked down at me and he said, hey, you got your ass kicked. Get back up and get in line, you know. And it all hit me all at once. And you start asking yourself, this is when you really find out who, I think, anybody, right, you know. There's those moments of complete self-doubt where it's like, you know, maybe people that said I shouldn't be here were right. You know, maybe a 1A kid doesn't belong here. And I remember from that point forward, I would go back to my my dorm room and I would listen to the Tom Petty song, I Won't Back Down, every night. And I was just trying to energize myself to, like, I think if I was from a wealthy family or if I was from Chicago, I think I would have quit. And because it was so hard,
you,
and
you,
I was
you
so
had
demoral.
The whole, OK, Calhoun County on your back.
I knew that I could not go home
yeah.
and tell these no. people that had invested so much in me, that had thought so much of me, the players, the other players that had done so much for me to be here. I just couldn't go home and face that failure. And that's really what kept me going at that time.
Otherwise, you might have quit.
I think certainly it would have been different.
Yeah. All right. So you get ear hold. Then what happened? Did you kind of redeem yourself?
So you redeem yourself. So what happens is now you're a 260-pound player. You're too fat and slow to play defensive end at the Division I level, and you're too small to play offensive tackle. So, you know, you're redshirted, and you're staring at least a year of nothing but grinding hard work and practice and in the weight room if you were going to have a chance to play, right? So now you're looking at it. This is a five-year opportunity. Can I make myself into a physical person that can play at this level at some point during this five-year period? And it really, I really just dug in, and it's just a grind. And I remember the day, I tell people this story often, and I think it's what happens to people in the military. And I have great respect for people who served in the military, and I'm not saying that my experience was anything near as honorable as that. But I think there comes a moment for people that when something is so physically challenging that you stop worrying about what it is that you have to do, and you stop trying to pace yourself, and you break, and you just give in. You're like, I don't care how much they run me anymore. I don't care how long these workouts are. They can only take all I've got, and I'm comfortable with giving all I got right now. What else do I have to do? I'm getting an education, and I'm just going to give this all I got and see what happens. And for 2 years, it went on like that. And I remember coming home, and you'd get the snide remark here and there every once in a while. Hey, there's a pulling guard. Oh no, that's a bench warmer, you know? And as much as those things stung, you just shut your mouth and you go back and you go to work. And I remember going in to my redshirt sophomore year, I had gotten up to about 310 pounds and I was strong and I was fast. And I remember thinking, I'm ready. And I won that starting job from a senior as a sophomore, and it was really exciting for me. I knew I was going to be a starter.
Hey, if you're just joining us, I have Craig Rubin with me, talking some football talk at IU. And anyway, Craig, so you became a starter, and so then what happened?
So there was something that was very memorable for me. We were on the bus, and you know, if you played football at Calhoun, we had a four-letter mantra, G-A-T-A, which is, of course, stands for get after their ass. Is it okay to say that on the air? You know,
you said
so,
it.
anyway, so that was kind of our mentality, right? And I remember getting on the bus to go to the airport to go to North Carolina for that first start. The game was going to be televised on ESPN. We were playing the number two ranked team in the nation, and someone, GA, rushed onto the bus right before we took off, said, Craig, your coach called and had a message for you, and it was from Coach Brandenburg. And I unfolded it, and it was just a little letter, a little post-it note, and all it said was G-A-T-A. And I remember being so motivated by that. And but still going out there, all the unknowns. I remember throwing up in the tunnel before coming out against North Carolina. The stadium was packed, and they were all waving those baby blue rally towels.
Yeah.
And when we go out onto the field, we were playing, you know, a defense that was Vonnie Holiday was NFL Rookie of the Year a few years later. He was a starting defensive tackle. Greg Ellis was a defensive end, was a first-round draft pick. Dre Bly was a corner on that team that played for the Rams for a long time.
Yeah.
This was a loaded team.
They were loaded.
So it immediately on the first drive, I remember down blocking on Vonnie Holiday and driving him off the ball about 8 yards, and it hit me immediately. I'm like, it is fully on. I can do this at this level, you know? And I was just, you know, it was the adrenaline. It was just so much fun. And you know what? As we're sitting here talking about this, I rarely talk about this anymore. And it's easy to get swept up in it because you go back to that moment and you can feel.
And you relive it.
Yes.
Yeah.
So it was big fun. And from there on, you know, I don't want to skip over a lot of good stuff, but you know, I started 33 consecutive games, after that in the Big Ten. And it was,
that's
it was
something a lot else. Of fun. That is great. And did you get some like practices off, you know, if you did well, you get a day off or two?
Never a day off. In fact, at that time we were not a winning program. So the answer was always to work harder and harder. And one thing I always tell my kids, because you don't play this sport without injury. And there's always that joke. I forget where it's come from. People say, are you injured or are you hurt? Because if you're hurt, you can play.
Right.
I played with steel plates in my shoe when I had hyperextended. You know, the toe knuckle ligaments were basically torn and you had to stabilize it. They would, you know, you get injected before the game with a painkiller, you know, which they, I don't know if they still do that today, but that was a thing. And, you know, I hyperextended my elbow one game. And so your elbow is like a wet noodle. And they don't, you know, you don't say, I don't play. They put a brace on there, which doesn't allow your elbow to flex past where it's supposed to. And you play with that. And that's just the sexy part, the games. The grind is the practice. And I'm very proud to say I never missed a single practice in 5 years of college football due to pain or injury. And that's really what I took away from the experience is, you know, when you go on, you know, and I know we're going to talk about some other things, but to be able to look almost any of your opponents or your competitors in the eye and say, you're not willing to give what I'm willing to give. And you learn that from football.
Hey, how about the NFL? You had a shot at the NFL.
Right.
What happened there?
Right. So, this is where it gets even more difficult. So I always say that the leap from going from 1A football to Division One college football was like running into a brick wall at 100 miles per hour. And I would suggest to you that the leap from Division One football to the NFL is a very similar leap. So my senior year, I was dealing with a couple of things, right? So the coach that recruited me got fired when I was a sophomore. I never played a down for him. New coach came in, Cam Cameron, and I came in with 28 recruits my freshman year, 25 scholarship players, 3 walk-ons.
What team?
At Indiana.
Oh, okay.
Right. I'm backing up for just a second here.
Okay.
When I was a senior, after that coaching change, there were 7 of us left. That's how difficult. Those coaches, they don't want the players before. Of course, everything's different now, right? With the portal, these players, they can go anywhere. And it's one of the things that I dislike about it now. You know, if it's fine that they're getting paid, you know, but look, when you committed back then, you had to commit. When I'm going to Indiana, you're going to Indiana. And if things got tough, you had to fight through it. And what I don't like about the portal today is whenever things get difficult, which is one of the things you're supposed to be learning about when there's some adversity, you're teaching these kids, well, you know what? If I'm at Illinois, I'll just go to Mizzou.
Right.
And if things get difficult in Mizzou, I'll just go to Memphis, right? And that's a very negative interpretation, but I don't like that about today's game. But anyway, backing up, right? So I was projected as a 6th, 7th round draft pick. So there's only 7 rounds in the draft. So if every team takes an offensive tackle, that's not very many. If every team takes 2, that's not very many. I remember sitting at home in my apartment in Indiana waiting for the call. Because the Jaguars had called me in the 5th round and said they were going to take me with their next pick, their next round. They had worked me out 3 times. And had they have taken me with that pick, I would have been drafted 2 spots ahead of Tom Brady, which would have been a great story. Coulda, woulda, shoulda. Yes. I didn't get that call. Instead, I got a call from my Aunt Sissy asking me, Craig, have you been drafted yet? And I'm like, don't call this number. Stop calling me. You know? But anyway, after the draft, this is how this works, or at least this is how it did work. I had 7 teams call, and let's say the last player in the draft that year in the 7th round got a $30,000 signing bonus. This kind of just gives you an idea of where you're placed. I had signing bonus offers from $25,000 down to $2,000 with seven different teams, and at this point, you're relying on the agent that's basically been assigned to you, and he's trying to tell you where your best opportunity lies. And of the Arizona Cardinals, Pittsburgh Steelers, St. Louis Rams, Indianapolis Colts, of the teams that were available to me, the Indianapolis Colts was the best opportunity. And I firmly believe that still today, that it was a great opportunity. Because if you're not drafted, now you're immediately, you're almost like a walk-on. You have to do so much more to overcome and to earn that spot. So NFL training camp was very interesting. And I would like to tell.
Well, you know what?
Yeah.
Believe it or not, we ran out of time.
All right.
Well, I tell you what, we're gonna hit that up again.
Okay.
So
sounds good.
We're gonna break here, and I'm gonna have you back.
Sounds great.